The charges of communist influence got louder after World War II, with right-wing groups, politicians, and conservative journalists denouncing alliances between black people, labor, liberals, and leftists. Stetson Kennedy wrote for the Pittsburgh Courier and labor union papers and worked with radio commentator columnist Drew Pearson to fight racists. Kennedy joined their groups, attended their meetings, and recruited a member inside Atlanta's Mother Clavern to spy on the KKK.
Sometimes a third of the persons in attendance at Klan meetings had police blue or deputy khaki uniform trousers sticking out beneath their Klan robes. So I was precluded from going to the law, so-called, and had to turn to the media. And we broadcast the minutes of the Klan's last meeting every Sunday, naming names of judges and business people and politicians who were in the Klan. I went to the Radio Superman, who produced a series called Superman versus the Grand Dragon. And when that was announced, AP called the Grand Dragon and said, "I think I just saw Superman flying over your Imperial Palace." The dragon just hung up, said nuts or something.
Kennedy even tried visiting the Capitol in a sheet and hood to jolt reluctant congressmen into probing right-wing activities.
I took it upon myself to put on my Klan robe in the back seat of the cab and go into the House office building with a briefcase overflowing with evidence. And all the secretaries screaming, and they sent for the Capitol Police, took me into the basement, and I explained what I was trying to do, and they released me.
These stunts may have helped get the story across and support Kennedy's unpopular work, with news pictures of a robed Klansman in front of the Capitol for the first time, perhaps, since the huge Klan march of 1924. But some ask if staging news events like this interferes with good reporting. Others argue this was advocacy journalism at its best. As black veterans returned proudly from the war, their media supporters geared up. By now, as Professor Adam Green points out, the publicity-savvy Walter White had replaced the brilliant scholar and critic W.E.B. Du Bois as head of the NAACP's publications.
Walter White had more mechanisms at his disposal in the mid to late 1940s than W.E.B. Du Bois did. A range of black newspapers, a black wire service in the form of the Associated Negro Press, the innovation of black radio public affairs programming in Chicago and New York, elsewhere, and the rise of a successful magazine franchise in the form of Johnson Publishing Company.
In February 1946, in Aiken, South Carolina,
Isaac Woodard, he's discharged, he's getting on a bus. He's in uniform at a stop in South Carolina. He has some exchange of words with the bus driver, and the bus driver doesn't like what he sees as this defiance of racial norms. And so then he calls the police.
The police pummeled and beat Woodard until he was unconscious, crunching out his eyes with the end of a billy.
Reported in The Crisis, the magazine of the NAACP. By now, African Americans were armed with more than just weapons. Professors Biondi and historian Adam Green of New York University.
There's a kind of media apparatus that radicals and civil rights activists try and use after the war. The NAACP understands the media power of the image of the state abuse of servicemen. Orson Welles reenacts the Isaac Woodard eye gouging on his CBS radio show. The show was subsequently canceled because Southern businesses protest and the network cave.
We're not here just talking about commercial media, but the virtual media of NAACP publications, the ways in which people create a kind of coherent building public campaign of opinion in the form of mass rallies and the like. These are media also. In 1946, an envelope of pictures are secured by Ben Burns, the executive editor of Ebony Magazine, to be published in a story about the Columbia race riot.
In Columbia, Tennessee, as then NAACP lawyer Thurgood Marshall recalls.
A radio repairman struck a Negro woman who called him a liar. And as a result, her son, a teenager, knocked the white man down and beat him up. and the mob came down to the Negro section of town to work it over, and the Negroes fired back.
And it's the first and last time, at least up until the mid-1950s, that Ebony Magazine does any reporting whatsoever on incidents of racial violence. It's seen as too hot. Jet, on the other hand, founded in November of 1951, is going to be a very available and very effective platform for both disseminating ideas and representing in very graphic terms the stakes in terms of African Americans understanding their involvement in a conflict, certainly a war of opinion, if not an actual war of bodies.
Meanwhile, new technology and new standards were affecting the way the white mainstream press covered race issues, even in the South. Historian Ray Arsenault says,
there is a greater separation between editorial and news reporting. You have the wire services, AP and UPI, trying at least to present factual reporting of what was happening. And it's at least an opening, a good faith attempt to tell the story. Alongside with outrageous editorials, very pro-white supremacist and hysterically anti-black and anti-liberal.
In the 1950s and 60s, the growing civil rights movement learned to use the new professionalism of the mainstream press to force the nation to take notice.
Martin Luther King, of course, adopted the strategy of creating didactic moral lessons in front of the media, not just the print media, but of television and of radio. It had a double-edged sword quality to it in the sense that there were many things happening that were beyond the scope of television cameras or of national journalists.
Time and again, the story of changing public opinion in the United States is understood as a story of when the New York Times goes down to Birmingham or when the New York Times sends a stringer down to Little Rock or something like this.
Historian Adam Green.
African American publications were very engaged in on-the-spot reporting, in serial dispatches, in the use of photographs and images strategically in order to convey a particular impression of a moment or an event. All of this was very important in terms of inspiring public outrage and ultimately public resolve.
When the federal government began to support civil rights, Southern whites rallied for massive resistance. Many Southerners, including businessmen and editors, railed against outside agitators and their own more liberal colleagues.
Only a few so-called liberal journalists were able to stand the heat. Ralph McGill, editor of the Atlanta Constitution, and his protege, Gene Patterson, being perhaps the most famous. If you look at Patterson's most famous editorial after the bombing of the four little girls in the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham in September of 1963, the editorial which was read over the CBS Evening News at Walter Cronkite's urging, those words were powerful.
A Negro mother wept in the street Sunday morning in front of a Baptist church in Birmingham. In her hand she held a shoe, one shoe, from the foot of her dead child.
Eugene Patterson.
We hold that shoe with her. Every one of us in the white South holds that small shoe in his hand. Only we can trace the truth, Southerner. You and I. We, who go on electing politicians who heat the kettles of hate. We, who raise no hand to silence the mean and little men who have their nigger jokes. We, who know better, created a climate for child killing by those who don't. We hold that shoe in our hand. Southerner.
We'll never know, perhaps, what impact journalists had on changing attitudes. Certainly the public opinion polls are not a perfect index, and yet there's a clear trend line towards a greater acceptance of interracial contact, coexistence, and interracial democracy.
May what has happened hasten the day when the good South, which does live and have great being, will rise to this challenge of racial understanding and common humanity, and in the full power of its unasserted courage, assert itself.
Today, Jim Crow segregation is gone, but in society and newsrooms alike, divisions remain.